with my friends up in the front seat. Next thing I know, I'm on the road to see the rainmaker. Sunshine on the way.
On WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPVLP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, this is Bryce Claypool with your WSLR news headlines for Wednesday, December 10th. Local news organization Suncoast Searchlight is hosting a panel discussion today about how development is reshaping our area. The event is taking place 6 p.m. tonight at Jacaranda Library in Venice and features officials from across the region, including Sarasota County Commissioner Tom Knight and Venice Mayor Nick Bachota. It will be moderated by Suncoast Searchlight reporters Derek Gillum and Josh Salmon. Speaking of fast growth, the Manatee County School District will open two new elementary schools next year, called Rye Ranch Elementary and Elementary School at Artisan Lakes. Both schools will be in the booming Parish area. Their opening ahead of the 2026-27 school year will coincide with an update to school attendance zones. Florida Republicans appear to be on a collision course with President Trump over regulating artificial intelligence. Trump, a fierce proponent of AI technology, announced this week his intention to sign an executive order barring states from regulating the emerging industry. DeSantis, meanwhile, is proposing a suite of consumer protection regulations he dubs, quote, the AI Bill of Rights. For the past year, Republicans in D.C. and Tallahassee have been on a crusade against what they deem wasteful spending. Florida Democrats want to turn that narrative on its head. In laying out their agenda for the upcoming legislative session, they're making housing affordability their top priority. But they're also calling for a government efficiency task force to scrutinize Republican initiatives that they deem wasteful. These include the immigrant detention facility Alligator Alcatraz, spending at New College of Florida, and the Hope Florida Foundation, which they allege funneled state funds to Republican campaigns. Breaking with a current pattern, one of Florida's public universities hopes to appoint a non-politician as its next leader. University of South Florida President-elect Moes Lemayem faces a final confirmation vote by the state's Board of Governors this Friday. He already received unanimous support from the Board of Trustees. Lemayem is a former dean of the USF Muma College of Business. He currently serves as the president of the University of North Florida. This has been Bryce Claypool with your WSLR news headlines for Wednesday, December 10th.
And good morning. This is Tom Walker with the Peace and Justice Report. I'm here in the studio with Julie Morris, our first guest. But before I start that, I want to say that the views and opinions expressed by the hosts, like me and the guests and the callers on WSLR programs, are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of WSLR. Programmers or volunteers. And before I start, I want to tell you about something that's coming up this coming Saturday. It's a really great event. December 13th, you can be part of the WSLR audience when Talk of the Town, which is hosted by Carrie Seidman, the famous local journalist, returns to the stage this Saturday, 13th at 11 o'clock at Fogartyville. Carrie Seidman will be joined by the Longboat Key Mayor, Ken Schneider, and Sarasota City Manager Dave Bullock, and Mark Mastfer of the Bradenton Journal. And they'll be talking about the governor's proposal to eliminate property taxes for the homeowners and how that would impact local housing prices and local services. Wow, I've heard about that. The doors open at 10:15 a.m. No arrivals can come in after 10:45 because you'll be there in the audience and it'll be live. For more information or free tickets, and they are free, just call WSLR at 941-894-6469. Now we have two great guests today, and both of them are talking about the same thing, loss of local control. Our first guest is Julie Morris. Julie is a co-host of the WSLR program, Our Changing Environment. It's every other Tuesday morning. Julie's a retired associate vice president of academic affairs at New College. She served there as a co-director of New College's Environmental Studies program. She also served on the WSLR Board of Directors, and I served with her. She was also the first chair of the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. Prior to that, Julie has chaired the Florida Game and Freshwater Fish Commission. And in these roles, she had frequent interactions with the Florida legislature, and that's what we'll be talking about as well. Well, good morning, Julie. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. I'm so happy to be here to talk about Senate Bill 180.
Yes. And people probably heard about it, but let's explain what it is and the problems that it's created.
So this was passed on the final day of the legislative session in 2025. And it was signed by the governor and implemented on July 1st, 2025. And it was drafted in the Senate by Senator DeSigley, and it was designed to address hurricane recovery and resilience. And then once it was passed in the Senate, it went back to the House, and it was passed by the House, and they added all of this language. And in the House, it was sponsored by our local representative, Fiona McFarland.
Right.
And so they added in language that prohibited any more restrictive land planning agent language for 2 years starting July 1st, 2024. So that meant that it was actually for 3 years. And so that actually meant that nothing could be changed about comprehensive plans or land development regulations from the summer of 2024 until the summer of 2027.
And it's like within 100 miles of somebody who was on the hurricane track, right?
Right, right. And so it turns out every county, all of the 67 counties in Sarasota, in the state of Florida, were affected by this prohibition on anything more restrictive, in terms of comprehensive plans or land use developments for all the municipalities and all the counties in Florida were prohibited until the summer of 2027.
Or until another hurricane comes through, right?
Right, right.
When it renews.
That's right. If there's another hurricane, and especially we haven't had any hurricanes this year, so anytime there's an emergency declaration within 100 miles of any storm affecting the state of Florida, mm-hmm. It resets to another year after that hurricane.
So if we have a hurricane, so to speak, every year, it could be perpetual.
Yeah.
And the idea is that local governments won't be able to, say, make you build higher or safer or avoid. What are some things that could prevent?
Yeah, it's already prevented a bunch of stuff that There's more than a dozen local governments across Florida have received letters from the state's land planning agency, the Department of Commerce, declaring that their proposed planning or land use policy changes are null and void under Senate Bill 180. In many cases, those local updates were designed to strengthen stormwater management, protect natural resources, or prevent urban sprawl. And one of the most troubling examples, voter-approved comprehensive plan changes are now in limbo under Senate Bill 180.
Right. And not only that, if there's some changes that the developers or property owners don't like, they can sue, right?
They can sue. They can sue even if they don't own property in the local government area.
Right, that's crazy.
They can sue, and if they prevail, the local government has to reimburse their attorney's fees.
Right. I don't see it. So what are we going to do about it? There have been some lawsuits, right?
Right. There's been lawsuits by Thousand Friends of Florida.
Yes.
And Manatee and Orange counties have joined a class action suit led by Jamie Cole from the law firm Weiss, Sirota, Helfman, Cole, and Bierman. Mm-hmm. And a number of cities have also joined, including the city of Alachua, Delray Beach, Deltona, Edgewater, Stewart, Windermere, and Weston. The suit was expected to be filed in mid-September, and it contends that SB 180 infringes on the home rule authority of local governments. And that's in addition to Thousand Friends of Florida. They have also filed a lawsuit.
And what complicates it even more is, as these work their way through the courts, the legislature is coming back into session in January, right?
That's right.
So they could change this. It's very confusing. They could change this thing.
Yeah, and so Senator DeSigley said there are a lot of great provisions in the bill, but unfortunately we're going to have to go back and clean that up. So he said that to the city council of St. Petersburg. And so he's planning to come back and clean up the Senate bill in terms of amendments to it. And he says that the legislation encompasses permitting procedures, debris collection, repair guidelines, resource coordination, and construction crane safety. And he subsequently explained that and his colleagues also didn't want governments to get in the way of post-storm rebuilding efforts by adopting development moratoriums.
Okay, so it's not clear at this point what power local municipalities have
until it works through the courts.
Or until they change the law.
That's right.
What if they change the law while it's working its way through the courts?
I guess. I don't know. He explained that he deleted the land use and zoning language from a previous version of Senate Bill 180 before sending it back to the House.
And the House added all of this.
The House added all of these restrictions on home rule to the bill, and then they sent it back to And that was when it passed.
So can you think of anything that we have tried to do and been prevented, or is this all a possibility? Have there been any laws that or regulations that we were prevented from making here in Sarasota that you know of?
Yeah, there's been laws. That Manatee County tried to encourage, and then uh, they This is a quote from George Cruz, and he's District 7 at-large member.
Mm-hmm.
When you're stuck with zero-foot wetland buffers in spite of a 7-0 vote to revert back to 50 feet, thank Tallahassee. When mm-hmm. you're stuck with policy 2.1.28 allowing for potential development east of our development boundary, thank Tallahassee. When our comprehensive plan update continues to be delayed and rewritten due to state agencies, thank Tallahassee. And so he's complaining specifically. I mean, he's the chair of the Manatee County Commission, and he's complaining specifically about these things that have been prevented in Manatee County by Senate Bill 180. And so they voted 7-0 to revert the wetland buffers in Manatee County to expand to 50 feet. They had previously been reduced to 25 feet.
So they wanted to place more buffers between development and the wetlands.
That's right.
And they were prevented from doing that by this new law, right?
Right. And then the new law also prevented allowing potential development east of their development boundary.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then when your comprehensive plan update continues to be delayed and rewritten due to state agencies, that is also prevented by Senate Bill 180.
This is not the first time the legislators tried to reduce home rule.
That's right.
But I believe you told me that home rule was enshrined in the Constitution. Can you how is that? It's contradictory, but what's in the Constitution?
The Constitution says that this is an argument that's made by Thousand Friends of Florida.
Right. Okay.
And so, the Constitution says that there's a single subject limitation on legislation in Article 3, Section 6, which says every law shall embrace but one subject and matter properly connected within. And this invalidates comprehensive plan and land development codes that have no logical connection to the main purpose of the Act.
Hmm.
The Act's title violated Article 3, Section 6 of the Florida Constitution, which states every law shall embrace but one subject and matter properly connected to the subject and shall be briefly expressed in the title. There's no indication in Senate Bill 180's title that the far-reaching effects of Senate Bill 180 are reflected.
Right.
The Act classifies political subdivisions on a basis that is not reasonably related to its subject in violation of Article 3, Section 11, parens B of the Florida Constitution, which states the enactment of general laws, political subdivisions may be classified on a basis reasonable related to the subject of the law. The Act violates the Natural Resources Clause in Article 2, Section 7A of the Florida Constitution, which reads, it shall be the policy of the state to conserve and protect its natural resources and scenic beauty. Adequate provision shall be made by law for the abatement of air and water pollution and excessive and unnecessary noise and for the conservation and protection of natural resources.
Hmm.
The law violates the Substantive Due Process Clause of Article 1, Section 9 of the Florida Constitution, which states, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Senate Bill 180 violates the unfunded mandate provision of Article 7, Section 18A, by general law requiring such county or municipality to spend funds or to take an action requiring the expenditure of funds. It requires that local emergency management related staff positions meet increased biannual training requirements and participate in an annual readiness conference. Section 16 adds many new pre- and storm event recovery requirements that will require expenditures by counties and cities. Section 24 imposes new requirements related to debris management sites that will require county and city expenditures.
Huh. So they're really taking away a lot of control that the local municipalities thought they had, right?
Right.
And you know, this bill I read, this bill passed with only one nay vote in both House and Senate, right?
Right.
So how could that be?
Thousand Friends speculates that the legislatures, they just read the title and they didn't read
there
the actual content. Right. Right. And so it's really a gift to developers.
That's why I don't like the term limits, I don't think, in the Florida legislature. The accumulated knowledge is gone, and these people are subject to the influence of lobbyists. Go ahead. What else should we say about this stupid bill?
So far, more than a dozen local governments across Florida have received letters from the state's planning agency, the Department of Commerce, declaring their proposed planning or land use policy changes are null and void under SB 180.
Right. Things change.
Yeah, unless things change, right. DeSigley has promised to fix the problems with SB 180.
Good.
In January.
That's great.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Because it has problems that he only added it in the House.
That's right.
That he didn't intend.
That's right.
I imagine he was a little upset.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
But.
And he's planning to fix those problems.
Okay, so that's kind of a promise he's made.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So we'll keep track of that, of course.
So he said that 90% of the time there are no issues with new laws, and he remains willing to tweak the remaining 10% according to feedback from constituents.
Sounds like it'd be a major rewrite of the bill.
Yeah, it would. It would.
A tweak.
They would have to get rid of all of the language that
moratorium.
Richard Grosso's analysis explains that Section 28 of the law, citing federal disaster declarations for Florida counties from Hurricanes Debby, Helene, and Milton, immediately renders more restrictive or burdensome comprehensive plan and land development codes changes adopted by every local government in the state of Florida after July 31st, 2024, subject to judicial invalidation.
Yep.
And precludes local governments from adopting such measures until October 1st, 2027. Residents, business owners, and a broad array of entities are given rights to challenge such actions, whether or not they live or own land in the effective local government's boundaries, or are affected at all by the regulations they dislike. And our entities are entitled to and attorney's fees and costs if they are successful.
Hmm. Makes no sense to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
So how can they fix? That's going to be a major rewrite, sounds like.
It sounds like there's two sections of Senate Bill 120, including the Section 28 and another section, which violate home rule and the ability of local governments to plan for resilience and management of stormwater and debris cleanup.
So what would be a good compromise? Just do away with all this, or are the developers do some sort of consideration? What's the compromise, if there is any? What do you think?
I think I think deleting the two sections of Senate Bill 180 would be that are drawing all these lawsuits from local governments in Florida should be just deleted from the bill.
Okay.
Because they undermine home rule.
Gotcha.
And that is protected by the Constitution, the Florida Constitution.
Who do you depend on for news of the legislature as it's on when it's in session or when the committees are meeting? Who do you depend on for news, or do you go straight to their websites? How do you get your news about the legislature? How do you keep up?
I keep up by following Seeking Rents.
Okay, that one column. I've read one of his things. It's very good.
Yeah, it is. And he does a lot of public records requests and figures out who is spending money on lobbying and how lobbyists get language inserted into legislation, draft legislation.
So what's his name? Do you remember?
Jason Garcia.
Jason Garcia, Seeking Rents is the podcast, and it has to do exclusively with state politics?
Yes, it does.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm glad you told me about that. I read one of his columns, of course, very thorough.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does that every week or every other week, that's very impressive.
No, he does it. He does it a couple times a week.
Oh, wow.
A couple times a week.
Wow. And he asks for contributions, but there's no charge for that.
Right. That's right.
Website.
Right.
Huh. Good for him. all right. So anything we can do as listeners, as ordinary people, anything we can do until they reconsider this bill?
So Thousand Friends of Florida was encouraging people to attend the legislative delegation meetings, the local legislative delegation meetings.
Which has already happened, right?
Right. Those have already happened. And so Jono went to the Jono Miller went to the Manatee County legislative delegation,
okay.
And he was the seventh person to comment on Senate Bill 180 and how it needed to be changed.
And did they seem to agree, or they just sit there in stony silence?
I don't think they engage.
Ah.
And then he went to the Sarasota County legislative delegation meeting, and I didn't get a report on how many people mentioned Senate Bill 180 at that delegation meeting.
They have those once a year.
Yeah, once a year prior to the legislative
prior
session.
Prior to the session.
Yeah.
We're talking about the state legislature. All of the representatives and senators from your area meet, and they meet with local officials as well.
That's right.
But public citizens like you and I can go either online or in person and say, 3 minutes?
Yeah.
3 minutes of whatever we like to these representatives.
Yeah.
And they sit there in basically silence because they're not invited to comment on each comment, but they sit there and listen, or forced to listen.
Yeah.
And I've done it before. It's a great exercise in finding out what's on people's minds, first of all, and letting them hear it.
Right.
And then they don't make any promises. They just sit there, but they've been put on notice, so to speak, that people are concerned.
Yeah.
So I like that idea. Maybe we should have it more often. You know, congressmen are expected to come back and have
town halls. Right.
Do these people ever do that?
No, they do not. But sometimes they show up at the post legislative session. There's a Tiger Bay Club.
I'm a member. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then they defend whatever they did in the legislature.
Okay, Tiger Bay meets every other week or so. Wonderful organization. It's been going for many years. It meets at Michael's and East at noon for you get lunch, and you can quiz a panel of people put together for a particular subject.
If you're a member,
right.
Right.
That's why I joined.
Yeah.
So I could ask questions.
Yeah.
It's a great organization. Doesn't cost that much to join. You and I recommend it, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else? Julie Morris from Our Changing Environments. We've got about one more minute, and then we got another guest coming up. Anything else, Julie? Upcoming or admonitions or criticisms?
No.
Okay.
That's it for me.
Thank you. Thank you for everything you do.
Yeah.
Carol Lerner, get on over here. She's over there in a corner going through her notes. And while she does that, you can stick around, Julie, if you like. I want to say again that that you're invited to be part of the audience when Talk of the Town returns with Carrie Seidman. It's a live event at Fogartyville, but the thing, you, the audience, and them are on the air. It's it'll be Longboat Key Mayor Ken Schneider, Sarasota Manager Dave Bullock, and Mark Masfer of the Bradenton Journal. They'll be talking about the property, the proposal to eliminate property taxes, which fund, I think, a lot of our schools, right, Carol?
Yes, the bulk.
Put it a little closer to you, about 4 inches from your mouth. There you go. You can bend it any way you want to. And the doors open at 10:15, and you've got to arrive before 10:45 because it's a live broadcast. And just go to WSLR.org and sign up. Okay, that's it. That's it. Our next guest is Carol Lerner. Carol is a founding member of Support Our Schools here in Sarasota and the current acting chair of that organization. She holds a master's in social work from the School of Social Policy and Practice at the University of Pennsylvania. And for more than 35 years, Carol served as an educator or social worker, program manager in public education for Philadelphia, New York, and Mercer County, New Jersey. Carol has authored dozens of policy and research papers on defunding public education and education equity and on school choice for the National Education Association, the Herald Tribune, and WSLR's own newspaper, Critical Times. In 2017, she founded Protect Our Public Schools, POPS. And I remember I was there. And then she became partners with Support Our Schools, the current organization. And she's the legislative chair for the Suncoast NEA Retired Teacher Association. And she's a member of the Florida Education Association. Her website, not hers, the Support Our Schools, is supportourschools.com. By the way, .org is available, I checked this morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you...
It wasn't at the time.
I know.
Interesting.
So pay another $50, you get both.
Yeah. Oh,
and
cool.
You can link one to the other.
Right, cool.
Okay, so welcome. Schools of Hope have been in the news recently, and please explain what they are and what the legislation behind them.
I just want to say one thing before I start on Schools of Hope. I was listening to the previous interview, and there are a lot of parallels.
Right.
Yes.
Local control
has been taken away from education.
Right.
So that's interesting. But let's get to the topic.
That's the key thing. But go ahead.
I can elaborate on that a little later.
Great.
Schools of Hope, many of you probably have seen articles about it. It's a legislation that's been around since 2017. I'll go into the history in a little bit. But the current situation happened in June. In the last legislative session, so that was the one last spring, there was a bill to revise Schools of Hope in a very bad way. It initially was geared to persistently low-performing schools and wasn't a good bill. I'll go into the details later. But they added a really devastating aspect to it, which is called co-location, which means that any school that has unused capacity, a large approved, and they're all just about all large, either for-profit or, if not for-profit, large corporate charter schools can move in at no cost. The school district has to cover all the costs. Now, that actually failed. That failed in the general session.
Uh-huh.
However, in the budget extension, and people probably remember that went on much longer than ever. So this was on the very last day of the session, a new bill popped up, much worse than the one that had died in the general session. The one in the general session had some guardrails where there had to be a certain amount of capacity not used. This had none. So it would mean, and I'm not saying this would happen, but if there were like 10, what they call them, empty seats, a charter school could move in on that basis. Now, they wouldn't do it for 10, but they will do it for 200, 300. And many of our schools were at 50% capacity, quite a few of them, meaning that there were hundreds and in some cases thousands of empty seats.
So they could move in and at no cost to the charter schools, right?
Not only at no cost, the district had to pay a lot of the operating expenses.
Janitorial services.
Janitorial maintenance, food service.
Food.
Transportation.
Wow.
Nursing services.
That's a real gift to these private schools.
Absolutely. And many of them are for profit.
Right. Okay. That's a threat to the schools. And where do we stand in Sarasota and Manatee counties?
Okay.
You said there are many empty seats, 300?
What happened, there were two rounds where they sent out what they called letters of intent, the big charter schools. And there are seven of them that are approved. There's one that's kind of small, so we're really talking about six. And they're the largest in the country, either the largest for-profit managed charter schools, huge. And two of those are in Florida. They're the largest in the nation, but they're also the largest and most powerful and the wealthiest in both the nation and in Florida. And then the others, people may have heard of, like KIPP is a nationwide chain, extremely powerful. It's not for-profit technically, but it doesn't mean that much difference in practice between the corporate regular and the corporate for-profit.
So in theory, these seats are up for grab if they're empty.
They're empty, yes. So in Sarasota and Manatee, they have not been hit as hard as some of the counties.
Mm-hmm.
The large urban counties in particular, and especially on the East Coast, like Miami-Dade, Palm Beach, they've received hundreds of these letters of intent, meaning that the charter school basically wants to seize the property.
Wow.
It's a land grab in the end, even though it's not like owning. In the end, there are ways they can maneuver and even actually own the property by taking over the entire school.
Has any of this actually happened yet? Or?
No. This is the stage that it's at. So on November 11th, 690 letters went out statewide.
Wow.
From five different providers, not every operator that they call them. They're approved by the state as Schools of Hope operators. Not every single one did, but five of them did, including two for-profit operators did. And the others are the large corporate chains. So now Sarasota and Manatee each received four letters.
Okay.
But only for two schools, and it's interesting. So two different
schools in each county or two schools?
Two schools in each county.
Okay.
In Sarasota, the schools are the Emma E. Booker School, which is the
elementary,
which is the historically black elementary school.
Right.
And Brookside Middle School, which is a large and there's a lot of capacity at that school in particular, the middle schools in particular. And I can go into that a little detail why this capacity problem occurred.
Yeah.
But let me first concentrate on the schools. And I don't remember the names of the two Manatee schools, but one is a school that's been turned into a program for like special needs and homeless. It's more like a service type school and very vital to the community. and the other is Lincoln, I believe it's Lincoln Middle School is the other one. Now, the interesting thing, so they each got two letters, but it was from the same parent company.
Okay.
Academica is the largest for-profit management company in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And they have different strands. They have different names. Like one is Somerset and one is Mater Academy. So they're groupings, but they're controlled. They're not only controlled, they were actually set up. It's a farce that it's just this management company that these schools hire. These are Academica schools, just with different names.
For profit.
So for whatever reason, I guess like hedging their bets. So if one fails, there's another one. They wanted to invade, as we say, these schools. So they chose to send from the same company two letters for.
Okay.
For the four schools for the two counties.
But no action has been taken yet?
So no action has been taken, but a lot of work has been done by the districts. I'm most familiar with Sarasota, so
right.
I'll use that as an example. The administrators throughout the state are pretty livid about this and have been quite outspoken for the most part, including Mr. Connor, Terry Connor, who is the superintendent of Sarasota Schools. He's developed a plan which they've actually been working. They've been looking at the capacity issue for years. It's not like it's a sudden realization because of Schools of Hope. It's been an ongoing issue. So they've been thinking about what to do about it. This forced the issue mm-hmm. in a very rapid way.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up with a pretty interesting plan that most people think, could work. So, one idea is that they're taking, the Booker Elementary School, the M.E. Booker, and also the middle school. Their plan is not geared just to these schools mm-hmm. that are at risk. And they're gonna put in like a big hands-on type program working with junior achievement. It's basically like, a small city. And so it will have like a lot of hands-on learning. There'll be a bank there. Instead of empty chairs, like a whole wing.
I gotcha.
Of both schools will have that.
Very nice.
And, it seems like they've gotten approval from the state so they can actually deduct the classrooms.
Right.
So let's say it would take the space of 10 classrooms. I'm just being hypothetical at this point. And each classroom, say, had 25. So you can just multiply that out and subtract that from the capacity. So that's one way they're doing it. At Booker Middle School, which hasn't been targeted, but it's terribly under capacity. They're also bringing in childcare programs, which is so needed for the community, more in terms of not developing the childcare programs by the district, but bringing in existing programs and such, which is great for parents too, because it'll mean that quality childcare will be relatively close to the community for those that live in, say, the Newtown area. So it's a great thing. At Brookside, they're going to turn the middle school part into a high-tech type academy. It'll be such that other students will want to go to it. It's going to mm-hmm. be very much geared to state-of-the-art, like artificial intelligence,
sure.
AI, and such. So it has some exciting plans. Wilkinson, which initially the school district was thinking of closing down as a way of consolidating, because there were a bunch of elementary schools that had a capacity issue.
So and were distributing those students elsewhere.
So they were thinking that was their initial proposal. Mm-hmm. There was such like a reaction that the parents of the children that attended Wilkinson loved Wilkinson.
Sure.
So there was a big fight to preserve it, and the district listened, and that happened. So they have an interesting plan for Wilkinson also. So it's a combination of consolidating and coming up with some real creative, interesting approaches to this. And I also have to say, from a person that has worked in many, many different schools and as Tom mentioned, in many different cities, even in the era of like 25 years ago, there were always empty classrooms. In fact, there's a law I was told by an administrator in Florida that when you build a school, you can't build it. You have to have slack in it.
Population growth.
Right. So, you know, at least like 10 to 20% of it shouldn't be filled.
Okay.
Plus, schools love to have empty classrooms. It means that they can do a lot of creative programs. It means that art teachers have their own classroom rather than art on the cart.
Smaller class
music
sizes.
Classes.
Yeah.
So it's not what they're talking about. There's all sorts of motives for Schools of Hope and all the other attacks on public education. Could I go a little bit into the history?
Sure, please.
Of Schools of Hope. Schools of Hope really should have ended very early on. In fact, it never should have started. It's an example of basic grift and corruption that unfortunately education all over the country, but particularly in Florida, it's been a playground for corruption. So when in 2017 you had a situation where the head of the House Education Committee, Manny Diaz, was also a top person, top leader in academic.
We're talking Florida, right?
I'm talking Florida. Yeah, right. So this is 2017. So he, with Byron Donalds, who was on the Education Committee, now he's the person who Trump has anointed to run for governor, the two of them developed a bill that would benefit Academica, and it was called the Schools of Hope Bill.
Okay.
So the Department of Education, the Florida Department of Education, ever since Jeb Bush was in, they pretty much had this approach of labeling schools failing schools. So in this case, there was a whole county, Jefferson County, which was a rather low-income county in the panhandle, small, large African-American population and such. They decided that county, the whole school district, was actually a failing district.
Damn.
And it was going to be taken over. So Academica wanted to be the group taking it over. They were also going to pump all sorts of, part of the bill was to pump a lot of extra money, basically double the amount that most districts get.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking big bucks. So in any other state, I think, or at least in a lot of states, it would be an obvious conflict of interest that here this head of the education committee, a top administrator at Academica, writes a bill for, and it was very much geared to Academica getting the contract. You know, they always have to put things out to bid and such, but it was written in such a way. So sure enough, the bill passes, Academica gets the contract, and it was a five-year contract. Well, at the end of the 5 years, the school district, Jefferson County, was in much worse shape.
Mm.
It was still a D school, but it was in chaos, just in total chaos, in part because Academica couldn't cherry pick in the way a lot of these big corporate charter schools are able to cherry pick. So what they do in a normal sense when they set up a charter school, you know, there are rules that there has to be like a lottery, so supposedly you can't discriminate, but they get a group of students in and then they figure out which ones are the good students, which ones will do well on standardized testing,
right.
Which ones do they want to say to the parents, your child just needs more services than our school can provide.
I see.
But when you have a whole county, you can't do that, right? So they were stuck with what they had. And when that happens, a lot of these schools that are supposedly high performing are not so high performing. So it should have ended then. It was a big, and there was a total scandal on top of that, which I don't have time to go into. But when that contract was ending, there was this total scandal about who would take over. And even people within the Department of Education were fired because people within the Department of Education made a bid to take over Jefferson County. In the end, because the scandal got so much press, it was returned to the district, and it's now like a CB type school under district control. Schools of Hope should have ended at that point, but it didn't.
Mm.
It limped along in part because, again, like it was geared to these very persistently low performing schools, and the model for the corporate charter schools is not that anymore. It kind of started out that way, that charter schools were for the minority students, for the students not doing well. Now they actually, if you look at where, like in Sarasota, where charter schools, recent charter schools, it's been Charter Schools USA, that's the second largest for-profit, they go to the wealthy areas to set up their schools, like Welland Park is where they are. East of 75 is one that they're opening up here in Sarasota. So there wasn't that much interest. It limped along. And then this idea came, okay, let's do this new model of the co-location. And that passed again because of a billionaire. So much of Florida education, as I mentioned before, there's so much corruption, and a lot of it is because the design of privatizing education is very much fueled by the billionaire class and all the different foundations and think tanks around them that they fund and support. And that's what happened in this case. Should I go into how this bill passed?
We got 8 minutes. You decide how to use your time.
So this is how it passed. So there's a very wealthy hedge funder moved to Miami a few years ago from Chicago, Ken Griffin. He's like worth $50 billion. In the last election, he spent in the 24 election, he spent $28 million for Florida politicians.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much bought the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
He is like intent on like basically seizing control of Miami in all sorts of ways, and particularly around education.
Mm.
So he is the one who wrote this co-location bill, working with a New York City company called Success Academy, charter school company. It's not for profit, but it's this large corporate chain that has messed up New York City schools.
Wow.
So he gave them $75 million with the idea of them moving into Florida, and they agreed. So they worked with him, wrote this co-location bill, and it was snuck in at the very last minute because Ken Griffin is in cahoots with some of the Florida legislature who live in the Miami area. And it got through. A lot of the legislators did not know what they were voting for.
Huh. That's strange right there. So Are you convinced or persuaded that the Sarasota School District has an adequate plan to change things to where they won't be used in this manner?
I don't think anybody knows, and including Mr. Connor, the superintendent. He was asked that question once, and he said, "We hope so."
Okay.
But to be honest, we don't know, because the authority, the way the bill is written, a school district can challenge, but all the power is given to the charter school and the authorizer, which is not this. Usually a charter school is authorized by the school district. That was taken away in this bill, and it was given to colleges or universities, which are now controlled entirely by the DeSantis machine. So
I wrote that a School of Hope operator can bypass the district and to initiate this co-location by going directly to a state university or
right.
Florida college system. So there's a worker in run they can make.
The district is cut out of it altogether.
So we may have them whether we like it or not. Don't?
Possibly. But I don't know. I think we're making it difficult
uh-huh.
for them.
Okay.
And it's interesting. It's not just here. Palm Beach and Miami, they received hundreds of these intent. They rejected them all. Now, I don't know what type of plan they've developed. I'm not sure about that.
Who rejected them? The school board?
School district, yeah.
Okay.
They
yeah.
said no. I think they said yes to one in Miami.
But there's nobody tried the end run yet to this state.
Yes. So now the next step is what happens, you know, like what will they say? The way the law is written, it basically says the district can say no, but they have to come up with an alternative, and it's really up to the charter school company, the School of Hope operator in the end. They have all the power. So we don't know. But, you know, all these things are political. Now, there is a bill, and this is where people, the audience, can help.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Senate bill that would basically repeal all these additions. It's Senate Bill 424. Senator Roussan from St. Pete wrote the bill.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, We need co-sponsors, and we need co-sponsors across the aisle. Senator Roussan is a Democrat. It's going to die if it's just him.
Okay.
So that's what we've been working on and encouraging people to contact legislators.
Which ones? Any their personal?
We need other, and since in our area in Sarasota, all our congressional delegation is entirely Republican.
To the state, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've been talking to them, but, you know, they say, oh, but the capacity, you know, why should we let unused capacity sit there is their reaction.
Right.
So thus far, there's supposedly a House companion bill that is in the works, but mm-hmm. we're not sure because it's past the deadline whether that will go. But they can always add an amendment to a bill to repeal it, or at least put in some safeguards.
Don't these charter schools charge for their students?
No.
No, they don't.
They don't. Now, charter schools are considered public schools.
Okay, so
there's
no charge.
A whole history to that.
Okay.
Initially, the idea of charter schools actually came from the trade union movement of teacher unions proposed it, but it was supposed to be within the school. It's supposed to be like a kind of a creative project to figure out different ways to reach students.
Got it. Well, we only got one more minute. I wanted to mention, by the way, that you have an event coming up, December 7th, right? Public Education Forum? That was a while ago.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Those are all those.
Right.
My apologies.
But we will on probably February 7th, we are going to have a big conference here in Sarasota that we're going to live stream throughout the state on this and other issues.
That's where I got the 7th.
It's in the context of saving democracy. There's a a conference in March that we're planning, and this is going to be one of the feeder events because education is such the cornerstone of democracy. So
that's on February 7th, right?
That's February 7th.
At the UU Church?
At the UU Church, most likely, yeah.
Great. Well, we'll mention that again on our show. Be sure to remind me.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll be there. Thanks for all your work in the education, all you're trying to do, all you do. Supportourschools.com is a website to keep track of this. Carol Lerner is who we've been talking about, one of the founders. We've got 15 seconds.
Thanks. Okay. Well, I mean,
Keep working.
Talk to legislators. I think they're very vulnerable on this issue. People are upset. And I think it